Okay. So we will hear argument in number 21-2374 LAX Electronics against the United States. Mr. Huffman, please begin.
May it please the court. I believe I hit the critical points home repeatedly in the briefs. The government failed to follow its own procedures promulgated in the Department of Defense Manual 4120.24, Enclosure 14, in removing automatic connector from the QPL. Section 12B1 of that enclosure states that the products should again be included on the QPL once deficiencies have been corrected. Now, as I stated repeatedly throughout the briefs, Automatic Connector submitted detailed corrective action reports correcting the alleged deficiencies, which were wholly ignored by the DLA. And I'd like to also note that many of the alleged deficiencies were based on MIL standard 790, a standard to which Automatic was being held, had not yet even been fully implemented by the DLA and had not been incorporated into the subject solicitations yet. And instead, the DLA simply claimed that because of repeated findings, Automatic's corrective action reports were not sufficient. This was nothing more than a conclusory statement, which Automatic did not even learn about until it had received the administrative record in the COFC matter. The DLA's allegation of repeated findings was not even supported by the record, which is even more problematic here. The DLA's refusal to even review the merits of Automatic's cars was in violation of the procedure set forth in the DOD manual and violates Automatic's due process rights here. In this case, the DLA's improper actions have prevented Automatic Connector from even qualifying to compete for contracts under against FAR 9.205 and 206-2. And I'd like to direct the court's attention to the aircraft braking systems case that I cited in my briefs. And further, it's critical to note that the government even misrepresented to the COFC a critical fact that the COFC relied upon in rendering its decision. The government alleged here that Automatic Connector did not respond to DLA's notice of removal.
Do I understand right that was a mistake that was acknowledged and then corrected, and that the Court of Federal Claims decided didn't change the result?
Well, yes, Your Honor, but I believe that was a critical error here. Judge Brugink had clearly relied upon that misrepresentation in rendering its decision. It was one of the very first things that he had cited in his original decision. And that doesn't change the, and I think the important thing here is that the DLA is trying to use those arguments to say that Automatic had failed to correct the deficiencies when Automatic was never even given any notice of
when did Automatic point to that mistake and direct the Court of Federal Claims to the mistake that the government had made?
I'm sorry, can you say that again, Your Honor?
Sure. The timing of when Automatic or LAX told the Court of Federal Claims that the government had made this mistake about your alleged lack of response, it appeared to me that you all didn't even point that mistake out until after you lost on the original motion. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
If that's correct, how could that be a critical problem or error by the judge if you all didn't even point it out to the judge?
Well, as an initial matter, it was the court's decision that raised that issue very strongly in its original opinion. And quite frankly, I don't think it's reasonable for the government to attempt to blame the opposing party for its own misrepresentations to the court. Here, the correspondence involved another attorney at my office, the principal attorney at my office, and quite frankly, it was simply a matter of taking the government's representations at face value. And of course, there was no reason to, for me, quite frankly, to understand, to doubt the government's representations until I received the decision and ran it past somebody, and they said, and ran it past somebody in my office, and I was told, we did respond to that. Why are we saying this? Or why is the judge saying this?
Okay.
Well, and that's when it became...
Then let's turn to the substance of that response. As I understand it, the response was, you need to take a look at our corrective action, our CARs, and didn't the judge or the Court of Federal Claims address in both the original opinion and then very clearly in the reconsideration decision that those corrective action were not going to make a difference, or at least that there was substantial evidence to support DPL's view, or DLA's view, excuse me, that those corrective actions were not going to be sufficient?
Well, certainly, Your Honor, but I think the record makes it very clear that those corrective action reports were not substantively reviewed. The DLA repeatedly stated that that those corrective action reports are not sufficient based upon repeated findings. Now we go and look at the record and say, what repeated findings are we even talking about here? And they simply don't exist, Your Honor. I mean, that's very problematic, especially when these findings are largely based on military standards that hadn't even been fully implemented at that point. So I believe that the government that the DLA was holding automatic to a higher standard that wasn't even incorporated with that. And I think that was the critical problem here. And then on top of that, we're being told that we need to bring ourselves up to these standards. We submit detailed corrective action reports and just simply get those corrective action reports swiped away, simply saying there's repeat findings. We're not even going to consider them. I don't see any evidence in the record that supports any finding that the DLA ever reviewed those corrective action reports on their merits. And as a result, first of all, that those improper actions violate the procedures of the DOD manual. There's no indication that the DLA ever reviewed those corrective action reports as required under the DOD manual, where it states that those parts are supposed to be once again included under the QPL once any deficiencies are corrected. So we never got it. So my clients never even got any response saying these corrective action reports aren't sufficient, and here's why. So my clients are simply left guessing here.
Do you agree that we apply the Huffman test to determine if the DOD manual is binding policy?
Which?
The Hamlet decision. Is that what we apply?
I'm not sure if I don't necessarily agree that the Hamlet standard applies, because the difference in the Hamlet case was there was a question as to whether what standard was even being applied there. So this is a separate type of instance where the DLA clearly availed itself to the DOD manual. The DOD held itself out. The DOD held out publicly this manual as the standard to which it would be operating. And Judge Brubank, I believe, correctly held that that was the standard to which the DLA applied, and correctly considered it as part of its larger analysis, even though I disagree with his holding that the DOD manual was not binding.
I think you suggest that DOD simply holding itself out publicly as if it was going to follow this policy is sufficient to make it binding policy on DOD. If that is your argument, do you cite any authority that is essentially the test?
I do not, Your Honor, but I believe that this is a matter of, frankly, common sense. To allow the DOD to post these standards on their website, hold it out publicly, and then not avail itself to those procedures simply, first of all, not only renders it meaningless, but it also prevents contractors of no due process when it is removed from the QPL. And quite frankly, I believe that's the absolute definition of an arbitrary capricious conduct, in contradiction to 5 U.S.C. 706, and I believe I'm into my rebuttal time.
Okay.
I can answer other questions.
Thank you. We'll hear from the government. Ms. Speck.
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. This court should sustain the trial court's judgment that the agency's decision to remove the two specifications from the qualified products list was not arbitrary and capricious. Automatic's first argument is that the agency failed to follow its own procedures. As we have argued in our brief, the agency's, the DODM, or the manual that we are talking about, is not a binding regulation. This is a manual under the Defense Logistics Agency. It is designed to have a program where agencies can buy these parts and ensure that there is a standardized process and quality assurance. And that is the purpose of the manual. It is not to confer rights to contractors. Again, the attorney for the appellant has not meaningfully argued how the agency satisfied the factors in Hamlet, specifically noting with the court had focused on factor two, noting that the agency had not followed the procedural requirements to give it the force of law, noting its informal publication on its website. And also factor number three, that the agency intended to establish a binding regulation. And again, the trial court citing language from enclosure 14, noting the precatory language that this has, that adverse actions, this is page 212 of the joint appendix, might be warranted, that I believe what opposing counsel has pointed to from appendix page 213, the product or process should again be included once they have been corrected. The agency certainly did not indicated a desire to maintain a flexible process, and this language does not demonstrate intent to create a binding regulation. But even if it did, the agency did not violate the DODM in removing the products from the the products produced under these specifications from the qualified products list. The DODM paragraph 12B1 says that they must notify them of the reasons of the removal and that the company should have an opportunity to respond, which it did here. And also contrary to opposing counsel's assertions, the agency did explain that it considered the corrective actions. This is on page 639 of the joint appendix, but that it did not believe that they would be effective. And this was, I think, well explained in joint appendix 10 through 11 of the trial court's opinion as to why the record was sufficient. It says that the memo is plain that DLA considered Automatic's corrective actions insofar as it did not believe they would be effective. And to support this assertion, the memo points to Automatic's past incidents, referencing past audits, stop shipments, and corrective actions that were not implemented, or at least no record which could be produced to the auditor.
Can I ask you about that, though? Mr. Huffman says that's just merely conclusory, and seems to suggest it's all based on the history, that there are no findings now, that is, I think, in 2019, but at the pertinent time, and it's just essentially a conclusory assertion, the history with this company has been so bad, we don't want to deal with them any further, I think is essentially his argument. Is there something in the record more than that?
Your Honor, the agency certainly made clear in its 2019, looking at the history and the 2016 audit, which is at pages 403 through 407 of the record. And then I think the agency's letter removing them from the QPL has to be looked in at the context of the 2019 audit, which is at pages 563 through 572 of the joint appendix, and the accompanying stop shipment letter, which is at 573 through 574. The agency there, after the audit in 2019, explained numerous serious problems with Automatic's compliance with DLA requirements, notably the fact that it still had issues with Group A and B testing. This is on not performing Group B tests to the instructions. This is at 566 through 567 of the joint appendix. And we would note that this was also testing issues regarding Group A and B were noted in the 2016 audit at pages 404 through 405. And also the agency had followed up in correspondence at 470 and 471 is just one example of the joint appendix with additional issues regarding testing. The agency had also noted in the audit report, and this is at 569, that there was a failure to document corrective actions, for example, from the 2016 audit, that the personnel that they talked to could not identify issues that they had rectified from that audit. And the agency also noted a number of serious issues, they had changed their machining process, which was required to get special approval from the DLA, which they had not done, and in fact had certified that their processes were the same, that there were traceability requirements and failures with the quality control system. And we'd also note with their other qualification, which was MIL-PRF-5539, for example, the audit in 2019 discussed retention reports, and that was an issue for the first specification, 39012. But since since July 2017, and this is at 456 of the joint appendix, for specification 5539C, they had been placed in a stop shipment status that had never been lifted. So the agency had they provided this audit in June of 2019. Automatic sent its corrective action reports in August of 2019. And given all the serious deficiencies noted in this 2019 audit, the agency did consider them and was simply not satisfied based on the duration and seriousness of the issues that they would not be corrected.
Can I ask you a question about the relationship between a couple of different pieces of the case? If I look at appendix page 9 of the Court of Federal Claims opinion, at the end of, I guess, Roman 1 before Roman 2, the court says, we conclude that the DoD manual is not a binding regulation. Nevertheless, it's the standard the agency applied, and so we're going to consider the rationality of it. Is your view that the case is over if we decide that the DoD manual is not binding, or is your view rather, as I think the Court of Federal Claims view is, that the case is not over, we still have to look at the reasonableness of what the agency did?
Your Honor, the claim that was presented to the Court of Federal Claims was that the agency's action was arbitrary because they didn't follow this manual. We would submit, based on the Hamlet case and the Lincoln case and other, of course, cases that we cited from the Court of Federal Claims, that it's not a basis for finding arbitrary and capricious action. We believe the court can, again, I don't think this was the nature of its claim, the court can review the rationality of the action, and that would be based generally in the arbitrary and capricious standard under Motor Vehicles Association versus State Farm, looking at the traditional APA factors, whether they relied on factors Congress didn't intend, failed to consider an important aspect of the problem, offered an explanation that runs counter to the evidence, or an implausible explanation. But again, I mean, our view is the case should be over because this is not a binding regulation, and he did not otherwise challenge the rationality of the agency's action. Your Honor, I just wanted to touch upon one other point, and that is the claim that the agency held automatic to a standard that it had not fully implemented. We would note that the specification for 39012 was implemented in May of 2017, and it was addressed as a required standard at Joint Appendix pages 231, 233, and 241. We also note that there were 3 emails from the DLA auditor that specifically called the fact that 39012 had recently transitioned to this standard, and that traceability of all parts was going to be held to a higher standard. That was in a September 2017 email, which is at appendix page, Joint Appendix 471. Also, in a September 2018 email, the agency reiterated that specification. That is at appendix page 512. And then again, yet again, in October 2018, at Joint Appendix page 561, the agency again reminded it that it would be held to that standard. If the court has no further questions, we respectfully request the affirmance of the trial court's judgment.
Thank you. Mr. Huffman, I think you have about 2.5 minutes.
The government's argument opposing counsel indicated that because the bid protest, the government made the argument that the that because the DoD manual was not binding, alleges that it was not binding, and as a result, that would end the case right now. I do not believe so, because in the context of this action, it should be remembered here that this was brought as a bid protest action, and the standard is arbitrary and capricious. So regardless of whether the DoD manual is formally binding, again, that is the standard to which the DLA held itself out, and the DLA should be held to that standard, and its actions in contradiction to that manual should be found to be arbitrary and capricious in the context of this bid protest action. The government also indicated that there were findings that the deal or that Automatic's corrective action reports were not effective. And again, I believe Your Honor did pick up on the fact that that was nothing more than a conclusory statement. And while the government may try to cite to prior issues that may have been found to be somewhat similar to the allegations of improper actions here or deficiencies here, those are nothing more than various testing and reporting issues, and they're not product failures. And while those issues are important, that's hardly a reason to effectively debar a contractor. It should be noted that Automatic Connector has been in business for over 50 years and hasn't had any product failures, and this action is crippling the business and effectively debarring Automatic Connector as a contractor. And as a result, I believe that it should be entitled to due process here, which it's not getting.
Okay, I think your time has elapsed, and we thank you for the argument. Thank both counsel, and the case is submitted.